All right, folks, welcome back to the latest Mountain West Wire podcast. This time we are recapping the title game, Go Broncos. And also we got some, luckily we held off to record Matt Kenner there, the other partner here with me. We got some bull talk a little bit today as well. So we got some excited, we got some drama, some excited fan bases, not excited fan bases, and whatever, we had the bull game, or the Mountain West title game. Let's get to that first. Twitter. Thank you for your mentions and follows. MWC Wire. Love it. Mountain West Wire on Facebook. We'll get there on Facebook eventually. One day. We might get a few people to pay attention to us over there.
One of these days.
But one of these days. Maybe if I do a Facebook Live and just scorch earth, and maybe that'll help out. Maybe. I don't know. Probably not. But here's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about the game and the bull stuff. And we'll have another show later in the week to get more in-depth on bull games, because I don't want to be that guy. Or you, Matt, either. Like, okay, Houston's played Fresno. What about Houston? Ed Oliver's good. That's what I know. So we're going to maybe do some research and convene early next week. But title game. We were pretty much right on the outcome, right? Correct? I think we're all pretty close on this.
Well, if I remember correctly, from our preview podcast, you and Raja were on the right side of this thing. But at least Fresno State covered.
They did. We knew that was too much. What did the final line be? Did we ever look at that?
Last I checked, I don't think I put it out on Twitter, but it was 9.5 in favor. Boise State was 9.5 favorites.
It went back up. So this game, like, also, it's also hilarious where we make some right calls. We don't make some right calls. Can people give me a round of applause for another correct Avery Williams mention doing well on special teams?
We can lead off with that if you want.
Because that was probably one of the huge turning points of the game. I mentioned him versus San Diego State touchdown. And I was thinking for something like, what's going to be the big difference? Because special teams, you had two missed field goals. You had the penalty to start the game by Boise State kicked it out of bounds. But then in this game, like, defenses were rock solid for 90% of this game. But then you have late in the game, like, you may not have this offhand, but weren't there multiple, like, punts pinned like inside the 5-yard line, or kicks that were caught inside that red zone, other red zone?
Well, okay, so if you look at the drive chart, that's basically the best way to try to figure that
sorry,
out.
Sorry, I threw it at you because I'm like, I remember seeing a lot of kicks. A lot of people say, flip it to field in this game.
Well, and it absolutely was like a story that ended up mattering in this game and I think it started mattering more, especially after halftime. And I think that's a credit to both punters, Skillen, and, you know, Blake Cusick, because if you look at the drive chart as a whole, on surface it'll say that Boise State owned an advantage throughout the game, that, you know, they started on average at their own 33, where Fresno State was starting at its own 24. But if you take away the 4-yard touchdown drive that Boise State had in the first half, all of a sudden you're looking at a very different situation, because, you know, especially by punts, you know, there were, you know, two instances in the third quarter where Fresno State had to start at its own 13. They started at their own 10. They started at the 1. They started at the 10, you know, on 4 different drives throughout this game. And, you know, if you look at what they did with those drives, you know, second drive, they start at the 10, 3 and out. They start at the 1, 3 and out. They start at the 13, 3 and out. It wasn't until that last drive in the third quarter that they were able to get some traction, having been pinned deep. And that's when you start looking at Boise State's side, and, you know, they were really kind of up against the same kind of situation, because, you know, last drive before halftime, they start at the 17, you know, and then in the 3 drives in the third quarter, you know, off the second half kickoff, they start at the 18 and they start at the 15. And then late in the fourth quarter, you know, they start at their own 6. And then on their game-winning drive, they start at the 9, or at the 10, rather. Mm-hmm. So field position was a huge part in how this game turned out. And it just so happened that, you know, even despite that, like you said, Avery Williams was one break that they got. And, you know, the other break that they got was the big play in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and they had one chance, too. Like, look really quick, like, they went 3 and out. They had their second best field position was at midfield. And they got nothing out of it. And so they had 2 good chances. But I was like, the Avery Williams, that was the game-winning play, essentially. His return where he nearly got in the end zone. And that's all they needed to get in there. It's where he got to at the 4-yard line. And then they did the, direct snap to Wolpin. Is that right?
Well, in the first half, it was...
oh, I'm looking at the wrong play. I'm sorry.
It was Madison.
Whoops. I know. So I'm like, wait a minute. I'm in the wrong spot. Sorry. I was looking at their long drive at late in the second half. I was looking at that drive before with the start midfield. Yeah, it was Madison, direct snap. And that was, not that that was the game, but that points were at a premium, man. There was no points in the third quarter. No points until late in the fourth quarter. Only 3-0 at the end of the first quarter. There, that play, like anybody who broke something big, like there was like Avery Williams play great. Obviously, we know he's one of the best special teams playing in the conference. You have him and behind Penny and the Wyoming guy, who each had multiple touchdowns this year. He broke through, nearly had it. 2 yards out, you're gonna get some points out of it. So they scored there. But these teams, like, there are so many drives. Like, this was a really defensive battle for the entire game. Boise State had multiple sacks. The only time against Fresno, which was the second time all year. Against Alabama was the other. So they got the backfield a couple times there. Fresno sacked Rippon multiple times. And late in the game, there was back-to-back sacks where we thought the game was over. Because there's a point where before that touchdown came through, it seemed like a lot of Boise fans were getting nervous, which I could see when I think they're more nervous about their offense, really, because their defense was fine. They were forcing 7 plays, 3 plays. There's a 9-play drive that ended up punt for Fresno, but their defense is doing fine. They're upset because their offense is going 3 plays, 5 plays. 6 plays in the second half. They missed a field goal and started the third quarter. But then it was a point where, like, there are so many, like, missed chances were a big theme as well in this game. Like, overthrows by both teams. There was that one play. What did Rippon have? Madison wide open, just overthrow by a yard or two. Easy touchdown. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Overthrew Cedric Wilson. More with McMarion, I would say his was a... He did have some overthrows. I don't think there was many that were... Some were just chucking it down the field, nowhere to catch the ball at all, no chance. Whereas I think Rippon had more just overthrowing. McMarion had his own, but they're talking about, well, the reason he doesn't get sacked is he just chucks it down the field. I'm like, well, yes and no. But there are a lot of missed chances in this game, and that's where, on both teams, I'd say more so for Boise than Fresno. Because Fresno, I guess that interception in the first half as well, that looked like it was nearly caught.
So, yeah, I think that there are several different instances that you can look at as, you know, and I said this on Twitter, but I might as well say it here. In a lot of ways, this game felt very similar to last week's matchup. And there were some, like, certain plays that you could point to and say, like, this was a turning point. You know, the first obvious one was in the first quarter where Fresno State drives, they get down the field, and the normally reliable Jimmy Camacho ends up missing a 41-yard field goal off the post. You know, if they convert those 3 points, all of a sudden you're probably talking about a different game later on, because, you know, Boise State wasn't able to do anything on the resulting drive, and it wasn't until later that they ended up getting a field goal from Hayden Hoggart themselves. So that was one instance. You know, the second instance that you mentioned was, you know, the interception from Mike Bell, that, you know, it was the correct call to overturn it. And I don't think there was any doubt that it hit the ground and he wasn't able to control it. But it struck me as being, you know, something that me and Raja both talked about in the last weeks. If you read our keys to the game for both teams, you know, one of the things we wondered about was who's going to win the turnover battle. And kind of like last week, where, if you remember, I believe it was the big play to AJ Richardson last week, where it was right off of Juju Hughes's hands and straight into Richardson's hands. You know, that Mike Bell, you know, not a dropped interception, but that INT he just couldn't quite come up with was one of those things where, you know, if that goes differently, that could have changed the entire course of the game. But then, you know, you have the kind of the dueling questionable pass interference calls on both sides. There was the one, I believe it was early on like in the second quarter, on Jeffrey Allison, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, that's what people are mentioning.
And then, you know, the one that was later on in the second half that I to me kind of seemed like a makeup call against, I believe it was Tyler Horton, if I'm not mistaken. But, you know,
you mean
those,
the one at
those
the
kinds
end,
of
one
penalty
at the end zone, or the one that was where he didn't turn his head around, or the one against Boise actually was called?
No, there was one against Boise that was called that, you know, at the point at which it was called, it seemed like it was a makeup call.
Oh, was that the overthrown pass, I believe?
I'm trying
to remember. There's a few. Okay. All right. Sorry. Go ahead.
So, you know, you can look at those things as, you know, points in the game where it could have turned one way or another. And then, you know, you get to the fourth quarter and you look at what these two teams are doing against one another. And kind of like last week's game, you know, through three quarters, it was almost exactly the same as last week. By yards per play, Boise State was 5.1 through the end of three. Fresno State was at an even 5. The big difference to what was interesting to me was that Fresno State, unlike last week, had a little more success running the football early on. Like, their longest play, I think, was only 13 yards. And, you know, for long stretches of the game, it seemed like Boise State was having a lot of trouble gaining traction, being able to get into the backfield to slow down the running game, which is why if you look at the stat sheet, you know, they only ended up with 3 tackles for loss. You know, one of those was a true tackle for loss. The other two were, you know, the sacks that they came up with later in the game. But it seemed like that was the kind of thing that was going to, you know, make a real difference through 3 quarters, because, you know, they weren't blowing people away on the ground. But Marcus McMarion, for instance, you know, showed that he could be a difference maker with his legs. You know, he had the fourth down, you know, bootleg empty, you know, the fourth down naked bootleg on fourth and goal.
Huge play.
That was, you know, that play call took guts. But even before that, you know, he showed a willingness to take off.
That 20 yarder he had.
And create with his legs. So, you know, even though the threesome of running backs was, you know, not necessarily explosive, you know, you still got, like, I believe 83 yards between the three. Josh Hokett, actually, I'm looking at Damari Scott. So between Hokett, Damari Scott, who they were using him on fly sweeps, and Ronnie Rivers, you know, it was fine. It kind of got the job done, I think. And when you compare that to what Boise was able to do on the ground, especially with Alexander Madison early, you know, they were facing the same problem as last week, where Madison didn't really have a lot of success. You know, he 14 carries, 50 yards, but the long run was only 7 yards. And that, you know, to me, led to a situation where, again, they were relying on Brett Rippon to try and win the game for them. And it seemed like, you know, at least through 3 quarters, he wasn't quite as efficient or quite as explosive as he was a week ago in Fresno. He only ended up 16 of 30, but there was long stretches, you know, late in the second half and all the way through the third quarter, I think, where, you know, if as a Fresno fan, I was watching him very closely. And I think that when you mentioned Boise State fans being nervous about their chances, that stretch in the third quarter where he was only, I'm trying to figure out what he was, he was only 5 of 11 throwing the football in the third quarter. So, you know, at that point, he wasn't quite getting it done, which is a big reason Fresno State was unable to, you know, kind of keep the lead as long as they were.
Yeah, and like his, like most, like going back to his rushing with McMarion real quick, most of that was the first half. Not much came in the second half once they kind of figured it out. But like they, like one thing too, you mentioned last week they were good on third downs. This week they were not. They were what, 2 of 13, which is tough to do. But this game, like Fresno was like, yeah, McMarion didn't play great in the second half, but defense kept them in this whole game. And I kind of said before the game, like at some point, the one unit that's going to be better is Boise State's offense. Because we had predict the unit, like quarterback, running back, receiver. Most of us were on Boise's side. It finally broke through. But McMarion, it's just, they had to do something more than a short pass every time. You can't rely on a screen or a 3-yard pass to Cedric, Keyshawn Johnson. Boise's kind of figuring it out. They were fine with letting him go deep because he was inaccurate down the field when it was anything beyond 10 yards. Like, I thought it was kind of weird. At one point, when they were at the 1-yard line, third down and 10, I don't blame him for taking a shot, but they take 2 shots downfield on the one-yard line. It's like, maybe that is the time to do a shorter pass to give you some room. Because he just wasn't as accurate as you liked him to be. And the running game wasn't great. Boise's figuring out on the defensive line how to stop the rushing attack. And this game, like, I felt if it's going to win, it's because Fresno's defense was just going to stop Boise the whole time. And it almost did. There's just special teams.
They very nearly did, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, kind of like last week, you know, the game kind of, there's 2 stories going on. There's the story of the first 3 quarters and the story of the fourth quarter. And, you know, as I was watching it, what really stood out to me was that, you know, it seemed like Jeff Tedford and Kalen DeBoer must have seen something they thought they could exploit in the secondary, because, you know, they only ran the ball twice in the fourth quarter. And McMarion threw the ball 12 times and he only completed 4 passes. And when you compare that to what Boise was able to do, yeah, like, you know, once they got the lead, they were trying to kind of salt the game away with their running game with kind of mixed results. You know, so they only threw the ball 5 times, but same as last week. You know, one team got the big play that they needed. And if you're looking at the last turning point of this game, it's that big completion that they had to Cedric Wilson.
Oh, yeah, the 59-yarder to set up that final score.
Yeah. So, you know, at that point, you know, you're down 14-10. Like, you're in need of something.
And we didn't mention, Madison was out in the game earlier because he did something to his ankle. So, and you bring in Wopen and whoever, Robert Mahone, to do something, and you're out that running back as well. It's like, when he was gone, I was like, there's Boise's got this because nobody could run the ball well.
Yeah, and so I think, you know, beyond the big Wilson play that they had in the fourth quarter, you know, Boise's, like, it wasn't flashy, it wasn't pretty, but Boise stuck to their running game, and Wolpin, you know, he didn't get offensive player of the game or anything like that. But, like, his contributions, especially in the fourth quarter, were really critical mm-hmm. because, you know, again, his long run was only 12 yards, but, you know, he was running between the tackles in a way where no one else really throughout the game was able to. And that ended up paying dividends late on that game-winning drive, where they handed it off to him. He powered right up the middle and finally found that space that they'd been looking for all game long.
Yeah, he had 21 yards in the final drive. Part of it, too, maybe, he was just more fresh because he had Madison playing the whole game. And then he bring in Souther back, who Wopen's done pretty good all year. But I'd have thought Robert Mahone may have got more carries just because earlier in the year. But part of it, he was fresh and didn't play much. So he has the fresh legs. He can see better, maybe, or just not as fatigued as Madison. That's a big deal as well. And I don't know, Rippon got player of the game for offense. It wasn't great.
How does that now go to Cedric Wilson?
That's what I was thinking too. I'm looking at the numbers. I'm like, who could you give it to? Like, Rippon was okay, 16 to 30, 246. Yardage wise, that's not bad per play attempt, but I know Wilson, he had the play that set it up. Outside of the special teams play, that was the play. I thought it should have been Wilson. 6 for 8 for 148, the long of 59. Without that 59 yarder, because what if it's overthrown again? There's a lot of overthrown passes, as I mentioned. What if the pass didn't go to him right away, bounced off his shoulder, he just doesn't catch it, or just a bad throw, or something happens? Fresno wins the game, I would think.
I mean, I think it's a testament to, like, just how valuable he was to this offense that, you know, Brett Rippon completed 16 passes, you know, and as a team, Montel Cozart, you know, Cozart was one of two, so they completed 17 passes together. Mm-hmm. Cedric Wilson caught 8 of those passes, and he was targeted 13 times, yeah. You know. Mm-hmm. He basically had the same role in this offense that, you know, he had last week, where he put up basically the same line minus the touchdowns this time around. And Fresno State still never had a good answer for him.
No. And he had also 148 of 255 yardage in offense or passing offense. I don't know. It's quarterback's a marquee position, but I'd say without Wilson, the game's different. Not that, if he doesn't have the game he has. Even, I guess, I'm just saying that 59-yarder was the turning point in the game, and that's the reason you should give it mm-hmm. to him. And it wasn't like it was Rippon hit him on target, but it wasn't a deep bomb. It was a pat. What was it, 20 yards downfield or 15 yards downfield? He just took off down the seam. Am I correct on that? Because I don't think it was just a bomb down the field.
Well, it was about, I think it was at least 30 yards.
Okay, maybe it was.
He stumbled a little bit, which allowed Jaren Bryant to catch up and bring him down.
Okay, I just wasn't sure. I remember it wasn't, I knew it was a catch and run. I just, for some reason, thought it was a bit shorter. But still, wide open, had the seam, that play. Man, but this defense, like, Fresno's defense, just, it's hard to blame. It's like, McMurrian put out the tweets, like, I'm sorry, I didn't play well this morning about the game. He apologized to everybody. You don't need to apologize. You scored both touchdowns. You just had an unfortunate pick. That was a great play by Boise's defense. And it's, I also felt like once Boise got the lead, I figured the game's over for them because Fresno's offense was second half was pretty bad. They didn't do much. Like you said, they barely ran the ball. McMurrian didn't throw the ball very well. He's only throwing short stuff. But I would say one key play that I don't know if it would have made the difference in the game or not. It was a pass interference call in the end zone against Fresno State. I see this way too often. In the NFL, you can face guard. It doesn't matter. You can stare the guy down, and as long as you don't obviously make contact, whatever happens to the ball, it doesn't matter. College, you have to make the attempt for the ball. I forget who was guarding the Boise receiver, but it was
Anthula to Kelly.
That's right, Kelly. Okay, I just remember seeing the name. Like, okay.
Yeah, everybody was saying if he turned around, that's not pass interference.
Turned around, didn't. Turn around, maybe interception. Hit him right in the butt, I think. Right in the back.
Yeah.
It was just an underthrown pass. And all I do, just turn his head a little bit, do something. Maybe not a pick, maybe a pick. Maybe it's just an incomplete pass. Boise maybe ends up with a field goal, 14-13. Maybe Boise still gets a touchdown, but you don't get an automatic first down at the two. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. And I think that play almost as important as the interception for Boise State.
Well, and the other thing that you mentioned very briefly that played a huge role in the second half is, you know, the amount of pressure that Boise State was able to generate. Because, you know, in the first half, it seemed like there were plenty of instances where Marcus McMarion had all kinds of time to throw. You know, for instance, I remember watching that one drive where they start on the 1 yard line. And it just, you know, they were only rushing four, I believe. And it just seemed like he had all day to be able to throw down the field. Mm-hmm. And it obviously didn't work out for him. But, you know, they must have seen something at halftime that they thought they could exploit. Because, you know, give credit to Curtis Weaver and Jabril Frazier. You know, they weren't really mentioning their name on the broadcast all that much in the first half. But after halftime, those two guys really stepped up, you know, and especially trying to attack, you know, not even McMarion's blind side. They were basically beating David Patterson, Fresno State's right tackle, straight up on more than a handful of occasions.
Exactly.
So, you know, to me, you know, that is another one of those things that's almost like the mirror of last week. Because I went back and I watched the game from last week before I was writing up the what we considered as a staff to be the most important players in this game. You know, last week it was Ezra Cleveland for Boise State that was kind of the weak link, especially late. This week ended up being Patterson. But I think that, you know, if, especially the one sack that Weaver had where he more or less beat Patterson on a pretty simple, you know, move to the outside to be able to get to McMarion. So, you know, those are kind of those small things that ended up making a huge difference in the end. And of course, one last thing that neither of us have brought up yet, you know, Fresno State's last drive before Boise State's 90-yard game-winning score, the forced fumble that Tyler Horton came up with. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that?
Trying to remember the one where that was just, but Fresno recovered that one, correct? Is that the one you're referring to?
But yeah, because Jameer Jordan had, you know, had Horton on a slant, so he got the inside angle that he needed, and he would have had the third down if he had been able to hang on to the football. But Horton forces the fumble; it ends up going backwards.
Oh yes, I do. Okay.
And though Fresno State ends up recovering, they have to punt it away, and that's where Boise State ends up setting up for their game-winning drive.
Oh, that before, okay, yes, I do remember that, yeah. And then also, what's really annoying, they were going to go for it, false start penalty.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what are you doing? That is frustrating. You could have the first down. You go fourth and one, was it the right guard or something, false start? It's like, you're at the 42, that's a fine place to go for it because you could punt and do whatever, but they got the 10, they eventually scored on the touchdown, set up the Wilson big play. That's also another area where fourth and one, had they got it? Maybe. Maybe not. Pretty good chance. I would say decent chance. You need 1 yard. It's all you need. 12 inches. Or not, 36 inches, I guess, if it's a yard. Not 12. It's feet. But you're right there, man. That's a... Nerves. I don't know what happened, but stinks to be that guy. That's unfortunate, but dang. False start penalty when you sort of have the momentum of decent... A pretty good play. Third and 10, you make a big play. Because you had first and 20. You get a 10-yard. Like, McMarion was playing well. O'Neal got the 10-yard run. Then they had the completion, like we mentioned, the fumble. That's a lot of small things that could have changed this game. Like, both teams missed a field goal. That could change the game. This fumble that goes back a yard. The false start penalty. And like I said, the pass interference call in the end zone. A lot of small stuff that could have made a difference in this game.
Yeah, and then, you know, like you mentioned, third downs especially. Because Fresno State put themselves in way too many third down and long situations. 0-7 with 9 or more yards to go. And granted, you know, the defense was just as solid against Boise State because Boise State was 0-5 on those long yardage situations. But, you know, last week they were able to kind of break past that. And this week it looked like, you know, a lot the same issues that the Bulldogs have been dealing with all season long. So, you know, credit to Boise State's defense for putting the clamps on when they absolutely needed to. And, you know, catching the right breaks at the right time. And, of course, you know, with a play like Wilson, with a play like Horton, making your own breaks at the right time.
Let me ask you this. Was there any coaching advantage in this game by either team? Like, did, say, Harsin get one over on Tedford or Tedford get one over on Harsin?
I mean, I don't think so. When you were talking about where we thought the advantages lied earlier, You know, I had coaching as basically a draw in this game because, you know, Harsin was not that far away from winning last week's game. And so, you know, it might have seemed like Tedford had outsmarted him. But, you know, in both instances, and I'm starting to think that if they played this game five more times, it would probably play out mostly the same way. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, now you're talking about two straight instances where through 45 minutes each time, they're basically even. And it comes down to just these handfuls of plays where last week it went Fresno's way, this week it went Boise's way. So I think it was a well-coached effort on both sides. I think that they both found kind of the edges that they need, or that they needed rather, where, you know, that's why it was another one-score game.
Yeah, I was trying to think, like, going through, like, was there anything... The naked bootleg was a pretty big play. Gutsy put call. I would say, like, that could have been one of the... Obviously, just not out coaching, but you're going to go for it. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. If had they made the other fourth and one, who knows? Maybe if they win, I'd give the edge to Fresno a little bit because you make that play call. So, but yeah, I don't think there's too many situations because it was all, there wasn't a scheme change. Maybe Harsin a little bit in the second half adjustments because McMarion did not run the ball very much in the second half at all or had no chances to run the ball. So maybe a little bit, but. Go back. I could say the Tedford fourth and one naked boot play. It's like it was. I think I chose Fresno, but it was like it was very very close. And I just didn't want to be a numbskull and just choose a push. Not that you were, but I'm just saying for me, I don't want to do that.
Well, I mean, and the only reason I call it a push is because if you remember last week's game, you know they had the fourth and one early in the game in Fresno State's territory. So it's not like they didn't show that they would have a willingness to go for it if they felt like they had a good situation to do it. It's just that in this particular instance, they did just enough on third downs, you know, going 6 of 17 where they didn't really need to. And they were creating, you know, enough chunk plays, especially in the fourth quarter, where, you know, they didn't necessarily have to push the envelope like that.
All right. Anything else you need to add about this game?
Can we do this again next year?
Yeah, it was a fun game, right?
It was a good game.
Same teams. They play next year anyways again because of the rotational of the schedule.
That's true.
All right, so yeah, that's a great game, great season. We got bowl season coming up. Before we get to bowl season, there's one bit of news that slipped through the cracks that we're going to write on eventually. Did you see what happened in Albuquerque?
I did not.
You're going to be shocked. You ready? Oh, hold on. I have to answer a few questions at abqjournal.com. There's a coaching change in Albuquerque.
Interesting.
Not Bob Davey. Offensive coordinator Bob DeBess is out, as is... lesser of an impact quarterbacks coach Al Simons. That's a pretty big deal.
That is kind of interesting and does make you wonder, you know, with the offensive shift that we kind of saw, you know, from week to week this year, where last year it was, you know, run, but also create explosive plays on the ground. Whereas this year, you know, they were a little more inconsistent throwing the football, a little more successful, but you know, from week to week, it wasn't quite the same offense that we had seen in 2016. So I'm curious, you know, with Lamar Jordan moving on, you know, Tuioti, I presume, is going to be in the mix to, you know, be in the role for the starting role next year. So what will the offense look like?
That's the biggest thing because he's been their only OC. He came from Stephen F. Austin, where they were a successful FCS team going to the playoffs, making deep runs like Montana State, those type of schools, North Dakota State, those guys, Eastern Washington. I don't know because that's all the only offense Davey's run, and Davey is a defensive coach. DC at Texas A&M, head coach of Notre Dame. I know they moved a little bit to the passing attack this year, but here's the thing. If they switch to a – because we mentioned this with what coaching – we talked about coach. I forget whatever. I don't remember. Recall the exact conversation, so I'm not going to stumble and think about it. Here's the thing: coaching changes happen, but Davey's had this system in place. I'm pretty sure it's not Davey's. I think Davey chose an offense that would be unique when he brought in the Beast a couple years ago, because hey, nobody runs offense. Let's be different. That's what happened. Look at years ago, the spread attack at Bowling Green, Utah, all these teams doing the spread attack. Florida, when Urban Meyer went there, obviously all three of the schools he coached at. That's a big deal. San Diego State kind of went to that but came back. So what are we going to do to be different? Well, let's run an offense nobody runs, and we will be successful because the triple option more or less gets yards. and gets production for the most part. Army usually runs yards. They've been good this year, not in the past, but Navy, Air Force, teams that do that. Georgia Tech, look at Paul Johnson. So I'm wondering, like, sure, what offense is going to be in town? Because Davey, who's he going to bring in? We'll keep an eye on what's going to happen, but if they make a change to even just a pro-style offense, they don't really have the depth, I don't think, to do that. Like, the quarterback situation, I know Georgia's gone. They played, three to five guys this year. Tuvati's there, and they had, who else did play? Not Cole Gauci, who's the guy who came in and won, whatever, versus Tulsa.
Are you talking about Austin Apodaca?
No, not, he played in the Tulsa game. They played like five quarterbacks, almost had the quarterback.
Oh, yeah, I forget his name.
But they played somebody else. I'm just, you know what I mean? Like, they played all these quarterbacks who come in to run this offense. If they even go to a pro-style set, they don't have a tight end on the roster. Need at least a couple, maybe two, depending what you want to run. You're going to need depth of wide receiver. I know they've been stacking up the past couple of years with JUCO wideouts to want to throw the ball more. But if they're going to switch to a drastic shift in offense, it could take years. They could be another step behind, because the reason they're that good was Taron Gibson, all these guys running the ball the past 3 to 5 years, Richard McCorley getting big plays on this offense. It didn't happen this year. So if they go to a more traditional offense like what USC runs, Wyoming, Colorado State, that could take time to adjust. And Bob Davey, does he have time to hang around to do that? Does he want to do that? I don't know. He's sticking around, obviously, but making that change, they may take a step back. Because I don't know who they're going to hire if they're going to keep the offense. OC from Georgia Tech, would he make that move? No. You're going to get maybe the OC from Army, that's a step up, something like that. I don't know. But if they want the same type of offense, they got to find a coach. It's not like they're rolling around out there to find a guy who coaches a triple option. You know what I mean?
Do you think they might reach out to Bob Stitt now that he's not at Montana?
Oh, anymore? Boy. Here we go. Yes, let's do it. Because he can make it work. His offense is already so unique, what he does. Why not? You know what I mean?
If you're New Mexico, do you just like, I mean, you have to give him a call, don't you?
Obviously, yeah, because he, like what he does, like if you haven't seen him play, was he at Montana or Montana State?
He was at Montana. Who, by the way, we should probably mention on a related note.
Bobby Hauck?
Bobby Hauck leaving San Diego State, going back to Bozeman.
Wasn't he the head coach there before UNLV?
He was. He was very successful there as well.
Okay, that's a roundabout.
You know, and if you go back and if you read some of the headlines, there is some consternation about the culture that he had established up there in his first tenure. So, I mean, I guess we'll see how it plays out. But, you know, good for him for, you know, getting back in the head coaching ranks, I guess.
Exactly. But back to Stitt, like what he does, it's unique in that he does spread stuff. He passes more than what they've done, but he could make it work where he would say, okay, we run the ball well, we have this offense in place. It would be smart of him to, if he were to be there, like, okay, we'll keep these basic nuts and bolts down, but I'm going to bring in a few plays here or there, a few new wrinkles that it's going to eventually be what I want to be, and do the slow build to a couple recruiting cycles to have what he wants. And it could still be a very unique offense where he's actually passing the ball, but still the basics right now. That would be that's a good move. That would be something they should look at.
So apparently they also lost their director of recruiting, or rather he was let go.
That's right.
In the same way that their coordinators are gone. So my question is, you know, if Davey is given the chance to revamp his coaching staff, is he the number one name on the hot seat going into 2018 now?
Do I start that now?
I mean, we can start thinking about it.
I would say
this has the makings of to me, at least, as someone who's, you know, seen this kind of thing up close and personal. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no telling that, or there's no question they fell off this year, and to me, it seems reminiscent of, you know, Tim DeRuiter, for instance, here at Fresno State, getting rid of Dave Schramm and Nick Toth, hiring Eric Kiesau and Lorenzo Ward, and, you know, it not being enough to save his job, you know, one season later. So I kind of have to wonder whether that's the case.
I would say so, because I've mentioned before, whenever you have not this isn't an overhaul, it's just a couple coaches, but like you said, DeRuiter, okay, need new OC, new DC, bring in almost clean house underneath him, he would be next to go. But Lobo shouldn't overreact. I would say yes, he should be on the hot seat, because a couple bowl games, they shared the division title a year ago, but remember where they were with Mike Locksley. Not that they'll go back to that.
That's true.
But this was not a great season by their standard the past couple years, but it's still miles ahead of what they did before with Locksley. So I would say, yes, he could be on the hot seat. If he goes like 2-10, Yeah, I can see. Well, it was New Mexico this year. They won four games. Is that right? Five games?
Well, I know they ended the year on a seven game losing streak to end the year.
That doesn't help. 3-9. So there's that. Losing like Fresno, CSU, Wyoming, Texas A&M, UNLV. A lot of decent teams on there. Bowl teams on there as well. Most of them, all but UNLV, I think. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a tough stretch. But I would say you're correct on that. But I would say be careful, though. Don't just make a change because you won three games again. He's been there 6 years, too. It's going to be year seven, I think, coming up with Davey, which is, wow.
Well, I mean, and the upside is, too, is, like, you look at what Utah State was able to do, mm-hmm. for instance. You know, they went 3-9 last year. You know, there was a lot of pressure on Matt Wells to perform. You know, he hired two new coordinators. All of a sudden, they're a bowl team again.
The ultimate bro in Yost.
Yeah, exactly.
So, we'll see. It's you're right. I'd say any other coach, I could still see Matt Wells being on the hot seat. Just because.
I mean, yeah, and like you said, it's a tough job.
Yeah, the year was up and down.
Keep that in
and
mind.
The year was up and down, too, for Utah State. It's not like it was a consistent game or, oh, we're in all these games. They played well, and they played really bad sometimes, too. So, all right, so one final bit of thought here, or a little bit of notes. We'll go through bowl stuff that happened. Hey, this show might be under 50 minutes, Matt. We'll see. Should we stretch it to an hour? No, probably not. We'll see.
Nah, we're good.
We want people to hang out. So, bowl stuff. Came out, we talked about last week how Vegas Bowl. People got mad at me for that as well online just because I mentioned, hey, Boise, no matter what, to Vegas Bowl, which is not far-fetched, but whatever. We knew that could be the case regardless because how the bowls are picked.
By the way, you know what? I was looking stuff up earlier, and I think we all forgot that when San Diego State won the conference in 2015, they didn't go to Vegas.
Oh, I forgot about it. I missed that one. Where did they go?
They ended up in Hawaii.
But was that the conference title, right? I mean, championship game too, correct? Yeah, 2015.
Well, yeah, because they beat Air Force, ended up going to Hawaii instead because the Vegas Bowl wanted a holy war.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, no,
between Utah and BYU.
Well, yes. However, there should be some clarification on that as well. The reason that happened because BYU had an option in 15 or 19 to go to one or two of those bowl games. So
that's
so
true.
It's you're correct, but there's other a little bit more info into that. So that is that's so 2015 how, yeah. and 11. So that means in 2019. If BYU's bowl eligible, they're going to the Hawaii Bowl.
They won't be.
Don't tell my neighbors or whatever.
anyway.
No, that's a good point. We did not bring that up, but that was more because of the contract, not necessarily. Well, I guess it's everything. They want a good matchup. Who would want that game? That's a big deal. But that's a good pull there that you found that. So what we have going on now, Aztec fans might be mad at the moment, but we got. Also, I'm liking how my bowl picks mostly came out, so I can give myself a pat on the back because I'm going to. We have bowl games already. Fresno, should we start there, I guess? Fresno lost the title game. They go to Hawaii, and they play the best opponent, right? By S&P Plus, the best opponent in the bowl situation.
That's true. I mean, for those of you who are interested in it, I would definitely encourage you to look it up because, you know, Fresno State, you know, even though they lost yesterday, still 25th by S&P Plus. And Houston is not that far behind them. You know, they only finished 7-4 this year. I believe they had one game canceled out because of the hurricane earlier in this fall. But, you know, they are a pretty tough defensive team. You know, they, you know, have Ed Oliver, who's obviously going to make an impact. They have a defense that, you know, on a per-play basis, finished second in the American. You know, they can create turnovers. So at first glance, this seems like, you know, surprise, yet another defensive struggle for the Bulldogs ahead of them.
Yeah, and they were just in American Conference play, third in points allowed.
They were 5-3. They beat Navy. They also beat South Florida, who was ranked 17th at the time. So this is not a team that you can overlook. You know, they did have some quarterback issues, but they seem to have settled on that with, I believe, Derek King is their quarterback now.
I'd have to look. I'm not entirely sure.
We'll talk more about that.
Also, tangentially related, I guess I'm using that right. Houston scheduled a cup. Boise State, we didn't write about it. We should have, but it happens. They scheduled some future non-conference stuff. Boise plays Houston down there in a couple years.
Those will be fun games, trust me.
Yes, they will. I remember watching when BYU was good a couple years ago in Houston. It was like a 45-40 game. And we remember last year, Aztecs. There was a struggle until the Aztecs defense just wore down the Houston offense with Greg Ward Jr. Mm-hmm. Are there lines out in these games yet? I have not checked.
I would be very surprised. I had not considered looking.
There were
yet.
Title game lines, I know, like for or playoff games, I should say. Nothing yet. We'll keep an eye on that. We got a few mentions here. I guess they're still building up their website over at Vegas Insider. But let's go back to Vegas Bowl because we should have started there. You got Boise playing Oregon, and
pretty good matchup.
Yeah, and there's first thing of Oregon. Everybody knows Brian Hout, LeGarrette Blount. That's what we think of, right? the punch in the face. And The Athletic did, if you have a subscription there, they did something a few months ago about talking not to LeGarrette Blount really, but to Brian Hoyt, like what he's up to and all that stuff. So if you have a subscription, go find that. I think was it Chantel Jennings who wrote that? I don't recall who wrote it, but look for it. It's pretty cool. It was something, but that's what you think of. Oregon, one quick note, there's a small chance Willie Taggart might not be their head coach as well.
I was just about to mention that if you didn't.
Because the coaching carousel is weird, and we'll get into more of these games in depth, but I believe, was it Taggart's agent was on campus at Florida State?
That would not surprise me.
A couple days ago, and so we'll see it. Oregon's been up and down. We saw them play Wyoming, crushed Wyoming. Oregon's had some, I'll look up everything later, but they had some issues at quarterback, injuries, and they finished 6-6, so they were an okay team this year. They weren't great. This was a kind of a rebuilding, obviously, year one after going 3-9 last year. Oh, sorry. They went 7-5. Did I say 6-6? Yeah, they went. They also won the 1-4 away from home. So that's even a neutral site. That's a pretty big deal. They lost Arizona State by a couple points. They got blown up by Washington, Stanford. They somehow crushed Utah. I'm upset about that. They basically any good team they played, they lost pretty bad. Like here's who they played, who was ranked. Arizona State's ranked now, but I guess this is that time. No, they're not. Sorry, Washington State. They lost 33-10. Stanford 49-7. Washington 38-3. So,
not great.
So, that's a good matchup. It'll be fun. It'll be fun to talk about Boise, Oregon, and Pac 12. And then there also will be, here's what's really going to take a twist. Let's just say Taggart's no longer there. Boise State head coach Brian Harsin, now Oregon head coach. He was considered for the job last year. And I believe interviewed, if I'm correct, too.
That would be really weird and really uncomfortable for everybody all around.
That would be, but we'll get to it. We'll see.
I guess we'll see. I'm assuming something's going to happen in the next week or so between, you know, when we're talking about it now and when we actually preview the Vegas Bowl. I'm just guessing something's going to happen. Yeah. It's going to make it a little more intriguing between these two teams.
Also, real quick, if you want coaching stuff, Football Scoop's really good at that. Check them out. Also, like I said before, I mentioned over at The Athletic, Chris Vanini, who used to do CoachingSearch.com, which I would avoid with the plague right now because they want to charge you $100 until March just for transaction news.
Yikes.
And like, really, guy? Like, come on. But if you have The Athletic subscription, if you ever knew what CoachingSearch.com did before, they have the coaching tracker. And I know a bit because I did some work for them for a couple months years ago. But he basically goes through Vanini there, just puts like here's one right now. Gus Malzahn agreed to a new deal to stay at Auburn. Okay. UCF, Texas A&M, former Aggie coach Kevin Sumlin considered for UCF job. Stuff like that. He had that's where I saw maybe you saw it too there, Matt, the director being let go of New Mexico of recruiting. That's where I saw that first too. Mm-hmm. It's only a couple bucks a month. So that's this time of year, pay for a couple bucks and cancel. Who cares? It's a pretty good thing to look at. That's one of the best things I think on their website right now. So check that. Also, you know, why it's great to be a college football coach? Also, you know, besides money and it's a decent job, hours suck. But Jimbo Fisher, I know it's totally off topic. Do you know what his contract is with Texas A&M?
Last I heard, it was 10 years, $80 million, fully guaranteed.
Almost. You got everything in there. $75 million, but $75 million, fully guaranteed. Can I get a job that's fully guaranteed, even if I suck at it?
Become a baseball player?
That too, yeah. You can be Bobby Bonilla. When's Bobby Bonilla Day? Is that still a thing?
Yes, it is. And it's in July. I believe it's July 1st.
Look it up. We don't want to talk about it, but look up Bobby Bonilla Day and you'll just kind of, it's a head scratcher. And also,
do we want to move on?
Yeah, I was going to mention about Danny White, but I'm not going to, just because he's the UCF AD who is up in the night at times. All right, next, let's do this quick. Next bowl game. I got the Mountain West website here. They have a release out. Here's the actual matchups here. Next one, New Mexico Bowl. Colorado State versus Marshall. Decent matchup there. It's December 16th. It's one of the only two games this year. We don't have to do a triple header that day, which is nice. So you go,
thank goodness.
Yeah, and overlapping triple headers is the worst, too, for these teams. So you got CSU Marshall. Marshall is they're now in the Conference USA. They bounce around a bit from league to league. We'll get to know more about Marshall, but typically, you know who they are, right? Randy Moss, Chad Pennington, those guys.
Not quite as explosive as they were in those in those eras, but you know, this is another team where, you know, they were down a little bit last year, rebounded pretty nicely. They have a they do have a very talented quarterback in Chase Litton, who was among, you know, if Mason Fine was kind of like, you know, the top guy in the conference, Litton had a very good argument as being, you know, the second or third best quarterback in there. You know, so he's still there. You know, they got a defense that's, you know, pretty solid. Nothing too spectacular. They were actually, they were by yards per play tied for third in the conference. So that made a huge difference. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we'll talk more about them. But they do have some nice players. They can, you know, create some plays down the field, especially through the passing game.
They can run reasonably well. And also, this is a team a couple years removed from being, what, 10-0, 11-0? But then they lost, like, everybody. And so they're a couple years away from that. So these are the guys that were coming in struggling past year or two. Now they're at the point where, hey, we're a pretty good team. So again, we'll talk to people who know about those teams. If you know a Marshall fan, let us know. We may chat with them because we want the best, right, to chat about these matchups. All right, so next game. All right, Wyoming Central Michigan going to Boise, Idaho. Can we just please not have it actually be a skating rink this time? Is there a heater underneath the blue field?
I don't think that there is.
That's a problem.
I think they would have turned it on last year if that were the case.
Or can they at least do what they do for, like, when they play U.S. national team soccer games or big-time soccer games? Like, they always play at the Columbus Crew Stadium. They put the tarp on. I know it's natural grass, so it's a bit different. But can't they put the tarp over the field but then have the heaters underneath up until, like, a couple hours before kickoff to do something? Or would that just melt the field turf? I don't know.
I have no idea.
But I was hoping it was Northern Illinois, or even I saw Toledo. Toledo, I think Wyoming would have got worked versus Toledo because, you know, it is Logan Woodside. He's pretty good, right? We've seen him do a few things.
Well, I mean, Central Michigan, I don't think they could be overlooked. They did finish 8-4. Mm-hmm. They did finish tied for second in the MAC West, you know. And, you know, like we just talked about with Marshall having a pretty good quarterback, so did the Chippewas. You know, they got a transfer from Michigan who you might remember, Shane Morris.
Yep.
You know, second in the MAC in touchdown throws, you know, quarterback rating of 130, which isn't too bad. I believe it was fourth among qualified quarterbacks. So, you know, they could score a little bit too, and especially if Wyoming doesn't have Josh Allen under center by then, you know, what is the offense going to look like?
Yeah, and at the moment, looking at Brandon Foster, they mentioned, did his injury have any concern over who, he's from Trib.com, but mentioned, like, was there any, talk to the AD, was there any concern about a bowl selection or where they'd go, because Allen, I guess that was not considered at all. So take that for what it's worth. And a lot of people right now also wish the Poinsettia Bowl was around. Poinsettia Bowl. So nothing new about that. Just going to look at a few things. But yeah, this is Tom Berman. So like I mentioned before, this bowl game is a little bit later in the bowl season. It's because it's the December 22nd. So it's about the time where, if it is a 6-week recovery time for that AC joint, he could be back. Maybe. If not, look for Nick Smith. All right, the next, should we skip the Lockheed Martin Armed Forces Bowl until the end?
We'll come back.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about that one. So next, Hawaii Bowl, we already kind of mentioned, Fresno, Houston, good job. That's a Christmas Eve, so ignore your family for a couple hours, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you can, right? Might as well try. You got the Aggie Bowl. I'm going to make this a thing, the Aggie Bowl.
I like
Nova,
it.
Home Loans, Arizona Bowl, Utah State versus Mexico State, December 29th. So that's I'm glad we got these bowls spread out. One post-Christmas bowl game at Utah State, or excuse me, New Mexico State has not been to a bowl game in 57 years. And there's a talk about, I think it was in the Albuquerque Journal, that they potentially, due to budget, were going to possibly decline a bowl game depending where it was because of cost to travel.
That would have been a huge bummer.
And that makes me believe a couple things. They're going to be joining the FCS pretty soon with Idaho because they want to be an independent and stay in FBS. And if you want to hear a bit about that, me and Eli, we're going to do a basketball show later, maybe tonight. There's some realignment shindig we're going to go through and talk about. So maybe two Aggie teams in the Mountain West, maybe. You never know. But this had some controversy because the Fiesta Bowl chose Washington and, who's the other team?
Penn State.
There's a trickle-down effect because Washington wasn't really expected to get in because the Pac-12 has two teams. And Pac-12, not that they're affiliated with this bowl game, but it kind of caused a who's going to go where because you move up the ladder. Because Pac-12, the bowl eligible teams, like Utah's not going to a Pac-12 affiliated bowl. So there's a couple things that push things down a bit more and impact this. I don't know. I'm kind of thinking it might have been a ruse a little bit because Do you get that feeling, kind of, how this played out?
I don't know. It's all backroom politics. So really nothing surprises me about how this turned out. And, you know, especially with the Arizona Bowl kind of being in that tier where, like, they're the last bowl to be considered in the Mountain West. I felt kind of bad for them. Like, there was the picture that if you go back and you look it up on Twitter, I think it was Erica Watson was her name. It snapped a picture of this dude, you know, crouched down, you know, hand over his forehead, face palming, like, what is going to happen? Kind of indicative of how this whole kind of shell game ends up going down year after year.
I don't know. It's and then I watched the Periscope Live video right when it came out. And once they mentioned, because here's the thing, there's a real thought, because there were 80 bowl eligible teams and only 78 slots. So they're saying if you're 6-6, you're the first to go. And so when I heard them talk about Merlin Olsen, former Utah State great, also Little House on the Prairie actor, for those who don't know, when they mentioned him, like, this is the last bowl game, bowl team New Mexico State Aggies played. And so once they started mentioning him, like, okay, Utah State's safe, they're going to this bowl game, because why would you mention that as a sticking point if you're going to play somebody else in your lead up to announcing? So I thought there was a little bit of shenanigans just to get some more publicity. Hey, it worked, but this is a bowl game I picked correctly. I picked a couple bowl games correctly. Fresno, Houston, Boise, Oregon, after I made a quick change. No, some dummies made me pick stupid Arizona in the morning. Last night I had Oregon. But let's get to the final game.
Well, actually, can we just talk about New Mexico State for a little bit?
Sure. We didn't really mention the team one bit. So, yes, that's something we should give a little blurb on.
Because, you know, I think it's going to be a really interesting test for Utah State because, you know, as we've talked about in a lot of recaps, they've been very up and down, especially on offense this year. And when you look at what New Mexico State has done, you know, two things stand out immediately. Like, they live or die by the pass, which, you know, Tyler Rogers, for better or for worse, is the guy who makes that happen. You know, 26 touchdowns, but also 16 interceptions. You know, the first of which is third in the Sun Belt, the latter of which is first. And they get after the quarterback. They've got four different guys with at least 5.5 sacks. They ended up leading the Sun Belt in total sacks. So, you know, if they can hang on to the ball, if they can create passes through the air, and if they can get Larry Rose back on track, like, he hasn't been quite as productive as he was in years past, you know, Utah State might have more of a handful than they expect. So it's going to be a really fun game to watch.
All right. Yeah, I think it will be. I think there could be – it depends what Utah State team shows up as well. Mm-hmm. Just because they've been – they're what – had to make the comeback versus UNLV. They had the defensive game versus BYU where Jalen Davis had a couple picks. It depends what team shows up, because this is a game where – it'll be interesting to see, because I don't know what Aggie team will show up. Hopefully motivated, ready to go, and Jordan Love does good things at quarterback. All right, let's get to the final game where there's a lot of people mad online about this one. 10-2 San Diego State. Also, real quick, are the Aztecs ranked? I didn't look at the final rankings today.
They were not ranked. Boise State, by the way, did sneak in at number 25 in the final college football playoff rankings. I believe one of our followers, actually, Chad Scott, mentioned that they were, I believe they were number 25 in three of the polls.
He does not
AP coaches.
He's always quick to point that out to us. Now, we love Chad. He did a few things for us last year, which is nice. I thought San Diego State was ranked. Oh, yeah, I guess they were in the 8 coaches poll last week. So,
yes.
Here's the thing. We have a couple – there's, if you just search San Diego State online on Twitter, you'll probably find just people not too happy. Like, we have a couple of guys who used to write for us, like Matthew Bain, Patrick Carr, not too happy, saying West Coast teams get screwed from because they're California, 10-1 team. They play Army. Okay, here's the thing. I guarantee what went down. Because last year, there was the deal to get them to play Houston. Although, actually, really quick, did we mention the bowl game, Army and the Armed Forces Bowl? That's December 23rd, so there's that. For those who are wondering, Saturday, so that's good. If you want to travel, great. This is a backroom deal that kind of fell flat, that fell through, I'm thinking. Because it was all along you had, everybody was hyping up the Foster's Farm Bowl like crazy. They're going to go there. They're going to get the Foster's Farm Bowl. Because there's a chance the Big Ten may not get enough bowl eligible teams. And my prediction last night before I changed, I guess I should change this morning, but it depends on the playoff. If you got two Big Ten teams in a big money bowl game, that would open up a slot. Well, that's not exactly what happened. That's why most people were thinking Aztecs can go there. Because it makes sense. Them or Fresno State, just because it's a local team, more so Fresno than San Diego, but still in-state. You get to play probably, I don't even know the matchup. It was always Washington State was what the matchup was going to be. But here's what happened. Aztecs were like, well, we want a better matchup. We want to negotiate something because here's what we did know. We knew they weren't going to the Las Vegas Bowl. For sure, we knew that was not a case. We knew they were not going to go to the Arizona Bowl because that's last pick, and that was a shoo-in for Utah State. And the Mountain West to go to the Foster's Forum Bowl had to fill out every option before then. Because Cactus Bowl could have been, like, I know it's confusing. We have the flowchart on the website if you want to see, but to get to the Foster's Forum Bowl, everything played out perfectly for the Aztecs. Two teams got in the Big Money Bowl game. All the Mountain West Bowl slots were filled. That was the two requirements, in my opinion, that needed to happen. I guess really the bowl slots were in writing, essentially. So that went into place. But then it's Purdue. Who's the other team? Is it still Washington State versus Purdue?
No, I believe it's Arizona.
Oh, yeah, Arizona. Purdue. It's like, okay, cool. You get to Khalil Tate. Pretty good matchup there for Arizona QB. But I'm thinking it was a backroom deal where nobody wanted the Aztecs. I'm thinking, as bad as that sounds, because the other bowl option, which I was thinking, could have been the Frisco Bowl. Because it's American versus at large. And if you San Diego State fans, well, that bowl, it's kind of new. It's the Boca Raton Bowl or the Marlins Bowl, Miami Baseball Stadium Bowl game at 10 a.m. or something being played. So it's kind of new, but you could have played an American team. It could have been UCF, Memphis potentially. They're staying home and made a switch to get to the Liberty Bowl. But I think it was just a backroom deal where, because again, remember, bowl games, they're a business, right? They want to make money. They want people there.
And multiple people were pointing out that, you know, this was mostly in regards to Fresno State, but I think it applies to just about everybody in the conference equally. Las Vegas Bowl gets its pick, and then ESPN is responsible for just about everything else that happens.
They own a lot of these bowls. Like, they own the New Mexico Bowl. They own the Vegas Bowl. They own the Hawaii Bowl.
Yes. So if you're looking for someone to blame, you know, in the same way that we were looking for someone to blame for the whole home field fiasco last week, and we ended up settling on BYU, you can blame ESPN for this one.
Who owns that bowl game? Do you know the Frisco or the Armed Forces Bowl?
I don't know.
I'm gonna look real quick. But what the options were limited. That's a problem too. And again, this is a roll of the dice with Aztecs.
And I think that this is the kind of conversation we seem to have pretty much every year with one team. Like, I wanted to go back and look back real quick at where teams ended up in bowls, you know, and in the same way where we mentioned that after they won the conference in 2015, you know, the Aztecs ended up in Hawaii rather than Vegas. You know, in 2014, Utah State won nine games, ended up getting saddled with a New Mexico bowl date.
Yeah.
And then even last year, you know, Air Force.
10 wins.
They went 9-3.
Okay, 9-3.
They had 9 wins going into the bowl game, but they got stuck with the Arizona Bowl. So I feel like, you know, something's got to give at some point. Like, they have to do something to come up with better matchups.
It's hard to do, though. It's hard to do. That's what people want.
It is hard to do. And it just seems like one team always ends up in a bowl that seems a little bit beneath them. And the only reason that I would, you know, I could make that argument, but I'm hesitant to do so. Army's pretty good.
Yeah. Like I mentioned, they are number two out of all the opponents, aren't they? Number three in S&P Plus. Or S&P Plus, sorry.
Yeah, like, and by, you know, if you look at the S&P Plus, actually they're middle of the pack. They're like 59th. But as far as Mountain West Bowl opponents, they are third. And, you know, they are 8-3. And if they beat Navy next week, they'll claim the Commander-in-Chief's trophy. They'll be 9-3 by that point. And, you know, if you look at their schedule, it doesn't seem that impressive on its face. Like, they've only beaten, I think, 3 6-6 teams. But then, you know, everybody was talking about, oh my God, why isn't South Florida ranked? Well, guess how many South Florida 500 wins they have? Just one.
That's zero. Oh, I guess 500, yeah, Temple.
Yeah, they beat Temple. But Army also beat Temple. You know, they beat Duke, bowl eligible. They threw a scare into North Texas, you know, 52-49 in one of the, you know, quietly one of the best games of the year. You know, they beat a bowl eligible Buffalo. So, I mean, and it's going to be a really interesting matchup because, you know, we know that they run the triple option. We know that they're very good at running the triple option. They did a number against Air Force earlier this year. So, you know, it may not be the ideal for a team that's 10-2, but, you know, if they beat Army, they're definitely going to be in the conversation for being ranked at the end of the season, which I think is an accomplishment in itself.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it is, you know, not a great look on its face, but I think if they can put together another very good win, you know, the same way that they seem to have been doing it week in and week out down the stretch, really hard to complain. And also, it's another instance where Rashad Penny can go off for 200 yards against this defense. And, you know, I don't think Aztec fans are going to complain about that either. So it's going to be a better game than I think at first glance or the first impression of it. You know, a lot of Aztecs fans might be feeling slighted, but it's going to be a good test for them.
I want to give you a quick question here, or ask you a question. Do you know how many, because everybody wants to play a Power 5 team, which, sure, great. Do you know how many Power 5, G5 matchups are in the bowl games, not including the New Year's 6 game?
Didn't you say there was only like one or two?
I just did right now, five.
There's five.
Just five. And so I get people want the name, but like there weren't many options. Like even if they got to the Frisco Bowl, okay, maybe who they would have played, whoever, some sort of American team, which is, you already mentioned, La Tech and SMU. SMU was flawed there forever, partly because location. They're right near that same Dallas area. And La Tech went there because, heck, they're nearby in Shreveport, not that far of a drive or a short flight. And it's like, so what matchup, if you were going to, like, the matchups weren't there. Like, there, I saw Birmingham Bowl versus Utah. It's like, 6-6 Utah? What is that? What does that prove? You know what I mean? 7-5 Oregon? Well, like, what? I see the allure of playing a Power 5 team, but when you're playing a team that's 6-6, why not play a 9-3 Army team? Why not play a team that's 8-4 Central Michigan or whatever? I get the name thing, but Utah's not a huge name. You're not going to play a big name opponent unless they're bad.
Yeah, and I mean, if you take the broader look too, and you see who, you know, a lot of the other really quality Group of Five teams are playing this year, you know, Toledo, for instance, you know, MAC champions, 10 game winners, just like San Diego State. Do you have any idea who they're playing off the top of your
Memphis?
Head?
Oh no, sorry, no. Who'd you say? Sorry, I was looking up something. What would you say again? What team?
Toledo.
Toledo. They're probably in the Motor City Bowl, right?
Well, I forgot to check the bowl, but I can tell you, but I can tell you that they're playing Appalachian State.
Okay.
Co Sunbelt champions. Mm-hmm. You know, the other co Sunbelt champions, Troy, another 10-2 team, just like San Diego State. Do you know who they're playing?
A G5 team.
They're playing North Texas in the New Orleans Bowl. So, you know, and this is not to try to belittle San Diego State's argument. I think it's a legitimate argument that needs to be addressed somehow. You know, I think some of these kind of middling teams need to be a little more willing to kind of test themselves as opposed to playing each other, because you can really only tolerate, you know, what, 7-5 Arizona versus 6-6 Purdue for so long.
Like this, really quick. Liberty Bowl, Memphis is staying at home. They made a trade. They're playing 7-5 Iowa State. Oh, yeah, they did have those. They have a couple decent wins. Didn't they beat, or maybe it was Iowa. Sorry, I'm thinking wrong team, maybe. But Iowa, no, they beat TCU. They're playing 7-5 Iowa State at home. They don't go anywhere, which is whatever. Bowl games, you like to travel, but they're a pretty good team. Was, what, two overtimes? Like, this close to playing in the Peach Bowl. Then they get to play Iowa State. How do they feel? What better matchup could they have? They even traded to get to this matchup, but it's not that great. And they are considered, I would say they're better than San Diego State. And look what they get saddled with.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is an issue that's, it's bigger than the Mountain West.
Yeah.
You know, even though, you know, South Florida, for instance, like we like to joke, but like they're playing Texas Tech in Birmingham. Texas Tech was like one of the last teams into bowl eligibility.
They had to beat Texas to get there.
Yeah. So it's one of those things where, you know, yeah, San Diego State has a legitimate argument. But they're at least one of, I would say, four or five Group of Five teams that have kind of the same argument where, you know, in the long run, I think it would be better for college football as a whole, which, by the way, I should probably preface it by saying I don't think it's ever going to happen because of money. Yeah. But I think that we would be better off as Group of Five fans if they were able to secure better Power Five matchups for those four or five teams that inevitably get to like 9 or 10 wins every year and then get stuck playing other Group of Five teams.
Yeah, because also I think San Diego State should be the top of that list because they've been ranked twice this year. And they have like all those other teams you mentioned outside of Logan Woodside. Who do you really know? Most people have heard of Rashard Penny. Like him and Woodside, that's about it. They've been ranked more recently. They're ranked last week. They've been ranked early in the year after they beat Stanford. But here's one other thing, flip side too. Had they stuck in the Mountain West Bowl system, options, Marshall, Central Michigan, New Mexico State. Really? You excited about those matchups either? You wouldn't play Houston because of last year, but like I'll throw in Oregon as well. Like, are you excited? Like, out of all these teams on here, you know what I mean? Like, who are you going to play? Who would you rather play than Army? Maybe Central Michigan? I guess Oregon because of the, quote, name thing, Pac-12, because they want to, Aztecs have a complexity of being in the Pac-12 or playing Pac-12 teams, which makes sense, but, like, who else would you rather play? Like, what are your options? Would you rather have stayed in league and play Central Michigan up in Idaho? That was a realistic possibility. The Mountain West did this. They're going to blame Craig Thompson. They're going to blame all this stuff. Couple things. Points. Blame the... Really quick. I know we're an hour already, which I said we wouldn't do. But first off, blame the former San Diego Chargers to leave town to close the Poinsettia Bowl. You can point blame at them because that only leaves Holiday Bowl. Why have that building open for at the queue for Aztec games and a bowl game? Blame them as well as part of it. But I don't think you can blame the league at all for doing their best. This was a thing where Aztecs probably requested as well. Hey, can we get a better bowl matchup? We have an extra team. We would like to be the team to find a better matchup or another matchup. Because they did well last year, matching them up versus Houston. That was a good matchup. So you got to put blame on both sides. Aztecs wanted out of the agreement to find the best matchup possible. Mountain West did their best to find the best matchup possible.
That's true. And I mean, it's also, you know, reminiscent of, you know, on the flip side of everything I was saying before, you know, you may recall, I believe it was 2 years ago, you know, obviously last year they got stuck, the Air Force, for instance, got stuck in Arizona and, you know, nobody was really happy about it. But 2 years ago, they were in that exact same Armed Forces Bowl against a pretty decent Cal team as well. So I think you're right that this argument kind of cuts both ways, and sometimes it works out for a team and sometimes you're left a little bit unhappy. But without sweeping kinds of changes, it's hard to see what's going to change about that.
Yeah, I don't know what can change, because the Big Ten and Pac-12 always want to play each other, even if it's not the Rose Bowl, the Holiday Bowl, the Alamo Bowl. I think Alamo Bowl, but these Power 5 teams want to play each other. So you can't blame them for that. But I'm wondering if there could be, like, this would make sense, but I don't think it'll ever. We're going to wrap up really quick on this because we have gone over an hour. But like you said, you have the four or five best G5 teams, 9 to 10, maybe 11 wins some year. Couldn't there be a way where, I don't know how it'd work, like kind of a rotational thing, or leave a couple of bowls open for these teams rated high enough in the whatever computer formulas you want to use. Like, I know I was against that for hosting, but get my point. Like, maybe leave a couple spots that are set aside for the group of five where they could be, I don't know, a bowl game would do. It wouldn't be until like the new alignment in 2019, but be creative with this stuff. Like, it's hard to, plus it's out west too. You want fans to travel. There's obviously fewer teams out west because there's only two conferences out west. Sort of CUSA if you want to go to like UTEP and whatever. There's not many teams, like 25 teams out west, essentially, 26 teams.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Wouldn't that be a better way for the bowl and the leagues to say, hey, if these teams are ranked at a certain point, let's leave these spots open, but they're only for it to meet certain criteria to opt out of your conference affiliated bowl games. But I don't know. It's just you gotta think about it. That could be an idea. I don't think it's too difficult because the Arizona Bowl has a matchup between, could be Sun Belt, Conference USA, or MAC at some years. Why can't it be this is a maybe some sort of poll or something, or like a computer rating where we have a few bowl spots open where it could be with the new Vegas Bowl? I don't know, because that could be big. That could be a boon for the Mountain West as well, where new bowl game, more money. Maybe they'll get Pac-12 4 to come into town. That'd be pretty big. But do you think that's too far-fetched to maybe set aside, just say, three bowl games?
I don't think so.
No. If you want to get a P5 matchup, it still wouldn't be great. It might be like Pac-12 4 or something. You know what I mean? Big 12 4, Big 10 4, but it'd still be a team that probably won at least 8 games, and it probably could be a decent opponent, more rather than playing a 6-6, whoever in the Vegas Bowl most years.
I'd be down.
Me too. Maybe do an article on that. We need to save some off-season talk content, so maybe we'll look into that later. But I think we wrapped up. We did go 1 hour, so I guess you get what you pay for, right?
Exactly.
Which is nothing, so thank you. If you listen to the show, we'd love it. So here's our real quick plan. We're going to probably do a bowl preview, like an early preview show, middle of next week. Does that work for you, I'm guessing? And sure. Then we'll start producing previews kind of game by game, or so we'll figure something out. But we'll have a show middle of the week next week to go a little bit more in depth in these matchups, because bowl game starts a week and 2 weeks from today, or 2 weeks from yesterday. So we got the bowl jingle in your head, probably, people, a stupid Capital One thing, whatever it may be again. We have that going on. But any parting shots? Are we good to go?
You know what? Can we give one last congratulations to Boise State?
Good job.
For winning the conference.
Exactly. Congratulations. So if you say we hate their team, no, we don't hate your team.
By the way, follow us on Twitter if you want to have a voice in what our new header photo is going to be for the next 365 days.
And
be sure to do that.
And Facebook.
Be sure to do that sooner rather than later.
Didn't we already change it, I thought?
Well, yeah, I changed it temporarily because one of our followers asked us to, and I was like, you know what, you're right. But we have four options, so go vote on which photo you like best, because that will be there for the next year.
When we set up the new account, we put up a San Diego State. I'm like, that's appropriate. We put up their photo. So we'll change our Facebook. We'll change our Twitter. Maybe we'll do this. We'll do first and second. One gets Twitter. One gets Facebook.
That actually
we'll maybe
works,
do yeah. that. So that, maybe we'll get people to go to our Facebook page for once.
fingers crossed. We're right?
hoping. So yeah, but congrats to Boise. You get a new header photo. And again, check our mentions. Check on Twitter. Unlike most brand accounts, we'll talk with you a bit, right? We may not agree. We may agree. We may give each other high fives or hugs, but we're good. That's all we got. So MWR.com, that's our website. Check us out. Blog Talk Radio, Stitcher, TuneIn, iTunes, wherever you get your podcast. We'd appreciate a review. Again, if you like us or not, give us 5 stars, but tell us the truth, because that's all we want, all what we want, really. So, but when, like we always end, yes, we're biased against your particular Mountain West team.